Good afternoon. This is the Joint Committee. I'm opening the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, the Subcommittee on Public Safety. It is February 13, 2017. Public hearing with public testimony on House Bill 5014, the Commission on Judicial Fitness and Disabilities. So, who we all that we have here to represent judicial fitness? Judy Snyder, commission members here.
Yes, I'm Judy Snyder.
And Susan Isaacs, yes. The executive director. And I know who's our legislative fiscal officer is Steve Bender. So, Mr. Bender, would you kind of walk us through you're going to walk us through part of the current service level and the budget overview. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and subcommittee members. The Commission on Judicial Fitness and Disability is your smallest budget in terms of dollar expenditures. The requested budget is approximately $250,000. This is an agency that employs only one individual on a half-time basis and then has additional costs as well, which are very significant at times and which they will be talking about here in their budget. The Commission is the third of three agencies in the judicial branch of government. The other two agencies are the Oregon Judicial Department, which runs the state court system, the Public Defense Services Commission, which is charged with providing representation for eligible clients who are unable to afford their own defense, and this commission, which investigates and acts on complaints of judicial misconduct or disability. The commission's budget varies by the amount of the workload that it has. The commission receives complaints and then reviews the complaints, and when it finds merit, orders an investigation or prosecution of specific complaints that are brought to it. In the current biennium, there's been significant activity in terms of investigation and prosecution, and the legislature added an extra $172,000 to the agency budget during the interim. Actually, it was during the 2016 session to address these costs. Again, this is on a base budget of about $250,000, so that's a very large increase in percentage terms. Those costs are not anticipated to continue into the 2017-19 biennium and are phased out of the current service level calculation for the budget. The other ongoing costs, again, most of the ongoing costs are for compensation for the agency's sole employee. There is a somewhat larger than normal increase or typical increase in current service level for this agency because the director's salary was increased by approximately 17%, which rolls forward in the current service level calculation. If there are no further questions, Madam Co-Chair, I'm done.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Stark, and members of the Budget Committee. Hi, I'm Judy Snyder. I'm a member of the Commission, a volunteer who's been asked by the Oregon State Bar to serve one of the three slots on the Commission for members of the Bar. I appreciate the fact that perhaps for many of you, you've not heard of the work of this commission, both because we are so small and also because it's not common for us to have a matter that attracts the media or public attention. We do have an overview of the commission's work that was prepared by Mr. Fagan. And I'm wondering if this would be a good time. Can you help us get through it? Thank you very much. So just to give you a brief overview of the work of the commission, if the work of the commission is actually dictated by statute. We are told what we are supposed to be doing in terms of the investigation of complaints against judges. And it's not only as a result of judicial misconduct, but also if there's concerns about disability. And those matters are brought to our attention most often by litigants in the courtrooms, but sometimes by court staff or by attorneys. So our jurisdiction is actually extended to almost 300 judges in the state, because it's the entire judiciary, with the exclusion of municipal court judges, arbitrators, or administrative law judges. For example, the ALJs that you have in the state system are not under our supervision. As a result of that, we have actually been able to function remarkably well for the past almost 17 years with Ms. Isaacs as our executive director, working on a part-time basis. Ms. Isaacs is an attorney. She's a trial attorney, has been her entire career, so she certainly understands how the judicial process works. And she, with her staff, have assisted us in the processing of complaints, which often involve gathering a great deal of information in order to understand the complaints, particularly if the complaint comes to us by a litigant, a layperson. They're not happy with the outcome. They may feel something has gone wrong in the process, but then we often have to turn to Ms. Isaacs and her staff to gather the documents in order to enable us to understand what has happened. The commission itself, as I mentioned, is composed of volunteers. And we come from three separate segments of the appointment process. Three public members are appointed by the governor, and they're confirmed by the Senate. Three attorneys are appointed by the Oregon State Bar. And three judges are appointed by the Oregon Supreme Court. And this has been really a remarkable, effective model based upon my years on the commission in terms of getting a diversity of opinions into the process. We also have a geographic diversity. There has been a real effort made to be sure that we reach out across the state to try to get members who reflect a diversity of all kinds. And to that extent, I mean, we as the commission have no control over who is appointed, but we do try to encourage diversity in the selection process. Another thing we have no control over is how many complaints come through our door, because that's just a funnel process where people can access the complaint online, or they can call Ms. Isaacs to get further information. And as you can see from looking at the statistics over the last 5 years, the number of complaints that have come in the door have varied dramatically from 163 at the high to 108 at the low. When you've got an additional 150% swing like that, it's really hard to predict what your workload's going to be. One thing that we do consistently, though, is we meet every other month. And in advance of that meeting, Ms. Isaacs does a fabulous job of giving us a real detailed agenda. That agenda is, in and of itself, perhaps misleading because it's only 3 pages. But if you look at the material that we're provided electronically behind that agenda, we're often asked to review 700 to 1,000 pages of documentation that pertains to the complaints. And those complaints are processed by the commission at its bimonthly meeting, discussing the information that's been provided to us, looking at the merits of the complaints, and then in many occasions asking for follow-up information, either from Ms. Isaacs and her staff to gather additional information, or on occasion to reach out to the complainant, or to reach out to the judge whose conduct is at issue to request additional information. Excuse me. On those occasions that we find, going to the doctor tomorrow, it's not going to do me any good today.
Do you like some water? Would that help?
Yes, that would. Thank you. That's very kind.
To the rescue.
I understand everyone has. So, you know, just from a personal experience, I've been on the commission now 6 years, and during that period of time, we've had a couple of judges whose conduct has seriously been impaired as a result of disability, and that has been dealt with in many respects with a firm but gentle hand, where it's been brought to their attention about what the concerns are, and occasion to the attention of the chief judge of the Oregon Supreme Court. And we have had a successful outcome where there have been steps taken either to enable the judge to get the help he or she needs in order to modify their behavior, or, if necessary, to get them to retire and step down in a timely and dignified manner. As a result of that, in the 6 years I've been on the commission, we've only had two prosecutions. As luck would have it, both of them were in the same biennium. And that is why our last biennium budget just was completely incapable of being predicted. If history proves to repeat itself, that particular unusual year is not likely to develop at any time in the foreseeable future. Obviously, we have no control over what complaints come our way or what conclusions we draw regarding the conduct. But when we have to hold a hearing, then we need the assistance of attorneys to help marshal the evidence, present the evidence, court reporters and the like, just as you would have in a courtroom setting. The purpose of all this is to be sure that the public is guaranteed a fair and honest outcome to matters that are presented before them, and that they have confidence in the jury, in the judge, as a result of which we apply the Oregon Code of Judicial Conduct and the Oregon Constitution as the standards by which we measure the behavior of the judges whose conduct we are considering. My thought is, with respect to the two complaints that perhaps some of you are aware of and may have most concerns about, two complaints that required hearings. One was actually a hearing that we resolved in one day, a single day. It actually resulted in us making a finding that did not recommend any discipline for the judge. That finding went up to the Oregon Supreme Court, and the Oregon Supreme Court upheld that recommendation. The second matter required a 9-day hearing, and that matter is now pending before the Oregon Supreme Court, and I believe will not be concluded for some months yet, as the parties are still in the process of briefing and oral argument is scheduled. As it relates to the extraordinary expenses that we incurred in the last biennium, we looked at our budget, and it appears that if we had just had that one-day hearing, we probably would have been close to being within budget, if not totally within budget, for extraordinary expenses, in part because we decided, since we were going to bend where the judge sat in order to hold the hearing, we would actually combine that with our bi-monthly meeting of the commission. So we all gathered in Bend and had a 2-day process, and that resulted in an overall cost savings rather than having a group of people come to the commission office in Portland for a meeting another day. The trial that went for 9 days is so unusual that it's highly unlikely that we're going to be experiencing that in the future, and there's nothing built into our budget requests for the coming year that anticipates that. One of the things that we've been able to accomplish is that we have persuaded members of the bar to work for the commission at the reduced rate of $100 an hour, which, if you are looking at current market rates for litigators, they're easily $400 on up for a litigator, with many of the partners in major firms commanding $500, $600 an hour. So we've been very fortunate to be able to get them to do it at $100 an hour. We've been given tremendous assistance by the state. We've used state facilities here in the building, down in the lower level hearing room, or through the court system. We've used the U.S. Judicial Marshals for security, and have really tried to do everything we can to minimize expenses. The 9 of us who sit, we're volunteers. You don't pay any of our fees. So we have had the ability to, actually, this is one of the most dedicated groups of people I've ever worked with on any of the commissions I've been on or boards I've been on, because everyone takes their work quite seriously. So then that leads us to the budget impact for this last biennium. We had an initial budget of for extraordinary expenses of over $17,508. We had to come back and ask for another $172,000. I was here. I had to make that request. and it resulted in expenditures for these extraordinary expenses of over $187,000. And we have provided as much detailed information as we can historically as to where that money has gone in terms of investigations, attorney's fees, court reporters, and the like. There is a little bit of historic information if you just look at this chart. You know, two bienniums ago, $2,700 in investigation expenses. A slight bump for $21,000 when we started doing the investigations of the two cases we've recently had. And then, of course, the last biennium when the hearings were held and the charges went up considerably. And that breaks down to mostly attorney's fees. Even at $100 an hour, we are talking about literally hundreds of hours of attorney's time in preparing and presenting these cases, because depositions are held, exhibits are exchanged in advance, discovery is conducted just as it would in a civil forum, and so it has consumed a good bit of attorney's time. And of course, then we do provide transcripts and have the materials available that the Supreme Court would ultimately need in order to review those matters. So with that in mind, we have two appropriations in the commission budget, our operation expense. Excuse me. A percentage of which, of course, is the state government general funds, and then our extraordinary expenses. My hope would be that the increase that we have seen in the past will not be repeated, but we have a request.
May I stop you just a moment?
Yeah,
because,
sure.
And the only reason that it would be increased is if you had an extraordinary number of complaints that you actually had. I don't want to mislead. We've got a lot of new people on this panel, mm-hmm. and I do not want to mislead them in any way. Your budget, and we give one-time dollars, and in this case it was 172 when you came and asked, because
yes.
the expenses were exceeding what they actually had, and it's a one-time appropriation only to handle the extraordinary case that you were dealing with, and so I don't want anyone to think here on this panel that this history is a continuation of what happened last time. It could go down sufficiently, but the it may or may not go up. So I just have to say that. Of issue mm-hmm. in going forward, and I might as well put that out there right now, because we've reviewed, at least the good other co-chair and I reviewed, on one-time payments like this, and they are one-time. Traditionally, we don't have where there's been one-time payment or used then for personnel actions, because when you do that, that then carries forward in the budget for the next biennium. And so, and that's what happened here. So rather than that 172,000 when the expenses were actually completed with the case in the cases in question, you know, those dollars then went into personnel action, or some of them went into personnel action. So you're gonna see in this budget that personnel action that you saw that talked about 17% and what have you, and then those begin to roll up. And I need to put that out there because it is of concern.
Co-chairs and committee members, John Fagan with the Oregon Judicial Department. We perform the fiscal support for the commission. They don't have their own staff to do that. So we perform the fiscal and budgetary work for the commission. To add a little clarification here, the commission's budget is split into two parts. They have the normal operations budget, which has the cost for the executive director, the personnel costs are associated with it, and also regular operating costs like travel expenses, state government service charges, everything else. There's a separate appropriation for extraordinary expenses. And any expenses that are associated with any investigations or attorney's time for prosecutions, hearings, et cetera, is kept in this separate appropriation. In most biennia, it has been running between $7,000 and as our current service level budget request is for the commission, this biennium, $18,000. So most of the time, if there's not a prosecution, if there's just some normal investigation, that budget is adequate for the commission's work. It's just when they do have some level of prosecution that's involved, then you can see a rise in the budget, and that's what happened during the 15-17 biennium.
So are you suggesting that that's going to continue the next biennium?
Co-Chair Winters, I have no idea. It matters on what complaints come through for the commission. We haven't seen multiple biennia of
that occurring, correct?
Yeah, the last time they had a big charge associated with it was several biennia ago. So it can be a long time between, or they could get a complaint tomorrow that would result in some extraordinary expenses.
Co-Chair Stark.
Thank you. And so I'm trying to understand what you're saying. Are you saying that the operational money that you receive, that allocation, apart from the extraordinary expense allocation, that operational can't be used for the extraordinary expenses that are incurred?
It was.
And the reason we're asking is because on paper, what it looks like is you guys said, look, we're going to run out of money because we have this extraordinary expense. And you came in, you were allotted a large amount of money for an extraordinary expense. And then after that, you had money left over that went into a 17% salary raise.
Co-Chair Stark, that is not quite correct.
Help me understand it, please.
Extraordinary expenses are intended to pay for the cost of the, at least as we put them into the system, is intended to for the cost of any kind of investigational cost or prosecutional cost associated with the commission's work. If there are some travel expenses that are associated with some of the commission's work, that goes into the operations budget where there is travel expenses associated with it. The operating costs associated with the commission for salaries, personnel costs, say government service charges, also rent, is in a separate bucket, and those are only allocated for those items.
So just clarify, the $8,000 or $9,000 raise could not have gone toward the extraordinary expenses?
Co-Chair Stark, we would work with the Legislative Fiscal Office to move expenses into extraordinary expenses if there was remaining budget and the commission did not have some sort of need for that. So, I mean, theoretically you could, but the buckets are statutorily set, and so we try not to, we always try to make sure that the costs are going to the right areas. Mm-hmm. And again, if there is excess budget that's available, we would have to work with the Legislative Fiscal Office and then come back to the legislature to have some sort of statutory change to take place.
I will actually ask Legislative Fiscal Office and you to get together on this particular issue to clarify this particularly as to whether or not all of the 172, I believe, thousand or whatever that number is, was expended on the particular activity of the expenses incurred with the various cases that were there. And if there were dollars that were remaining, what happened to those dollars?
Yeah. Co-Chair Stark, excuse me.
Sorry. Co-Chair Winters, think he had a comment.
thank you, Madam Co-Chair. But just to clarify, as Mr. Fagan was mentioning, any funds that were available in the regular, what we call the operations or administration appropriation, could have been used to offset the request for cost for additional funding for extraordinary expenses. The legislature can transfer and could have transferred those funds during the 2016 session.
Co-Chair Stark, I wanted to clarify one thing. I was down here approximately a year or so ago when we reported to the Budget Committee about the increase in salary that we were giving to Ms. Isaacs. I didn't want you to think that this was something that was done behind the scenes. Actually, we had addressed that issue because she had gone for many years without having any sort of an increase in salary, and we were looking at comparable salaries that were paid to the state attorney generals, the Department of Justice, and recognizing that she was way under market for comparable work. And so everything we did in terms of that particular pay raise was addressed to the legislature, and nothing was done to suggest that that was kind of like an off-the-books transaction. And I think it might have been, if not the same hearing where we received the $172,000, it was shortly thereafter. And I agree, we can easily provide the information to verify that the funds the state provided have been spent for those expenses.
Mm-hmm. And I think that would clear up the issue mm-hmm. as to which bucket everything went to in that process. That would be very helpful. So, but if you would get with the legislative fiscal office and provide that, that would be very helpful.
Which brings us to the next part of the presentation.
Which is where we are today. Okay, so we have asked for consideration to increase Ms. Isaacs' workload to a 0.625. She's been working as a part-time employee, a 0.5 FTE, for many years. I sense that we are getting, we are leaning on her to do work well beyond 0.5 FTE. Looking at the extraordinary amount of effort that she has to put into the work of the commission for preparation for our meetings, the substantial amount of interactions that she has with complainants and document gathering, in addition to the extraordinary time that some of these prosecutions have taken, we recognize that in order to be able to keep the quality of the work of the commission at the level that we want, where we know as the commission that we're getting the best evidence that is available, we would really like to have her available to us at a 0.625. That's a 25% increase from her historic hours dedicated to the work of the commission. There is a slight increase requested in extraordinary expenses. Speaking in round numbers, they have been historically around $17,000 in our biennium budget.
I still want to go back to my question, whether or not you anticipate that this case that you referred to, mm-hmm. and I'm very familiar with the case, was a very extraordinary case that was involved with, and whether or not you anticipate going forward for a 17-19 more of those types of cases, which then would warrant an increase in the number of time and staff that time that would be available, or whether you think that this was extraordinary, something that we see very seldom in Oregon. I've been here for quite some time, and you know it's not normal. Let me put it that way, in judicial fitness that we have, you know, the kind of case, those kind of cases that occur, unless you're telling me that from the standpoint of the judicial branches, you're going to find more issues of sort that will require, you know, some more probative kinds of activity on your part.
Well, let me, Madam Chair, let me speak within the confines of our confidentiality. We are looking right now at a couple of very serious issues that have been presented to us by members of the public and by attorneys who have appeared before a particular judge. That has not led to us hiring an investigator. That has not led to us initiating a prosecution. But the work is serious. We're taking it seriously, and we're looking at it from the perspective of trying to, right now, as members of the commission, understand what happened. I cannot tell you that we are going to be initiating prosecutions in the next biennium, But nor can I tell you that we will not be initiating prosecutions. That will depend upon what we find.
We've always had, as you know, those...
Those one-day ones.
Those one-day and 2 days and what have you. So what I'm trying to get at, particularly when you're talking about a 25% change in work activity, I'm trying to get there. I'm trying to try to understand the rationale behind it, particularly when the past practices, with the exception of those very things that happen, does not say that, you know, you're talking about 25% more activity, and I'm just trying to understand it.
And I think that's fair, because clearly saying a 25% is just an estimate of what we anticipate will occur in terms of demands on Ms. Right. Isaac's time.
And my other caveat, because this body has always been very willing and open when you have the need, where you have cases or where that occurs, that you're going to need more investigation and what have you. They've always been able to provide those fundings for you. So with that, I'm going to actually, Senator Steiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm one of the newbies, so bear with me. So when you see an increase in complaints, and I'm very familiar with the medical board side of this, right?
Yes.
There can be a host of reasons, right? People are more aware of the ability to complain because the commission's done a better job of saying, if you have concerns, reach out to us, which is a good thing, right? Or we have judges who potentially are out of sync with the times. We see this with physicians who don't keep up with practice standards, right? Standard of care. Or you see people who are aging, or we see people who are struggling with substance abuse. Obviously, it's tough to generalize from just a few cases, but do you have a sense that we're facing any of those trends, or do you think these are all just a series of unfortunate events?
Senator Steiner, I won't say that we're seeing a trend.
Okay.
I do think that with the amount of media attention that was drawn to the work of the commission over the last year and a half, and which is likely to again be drawn to the work of the commission when the Supreme Court makes its ruling on the pending case, that necessarily is going to say to people in our community, hey, there's a place you can go if you're unhappy with the way the judge handled that matter that you had before him or her. That doesn't mean that those cases have any greater merit. And so as it relates to what cases prove to be meritorious, it's completely unpredictable. And I would be foolhardy to suggest we could predict it.
And I wouldn't ask you to, but because your volume isn't high enough. But you know, when you have the level of experience that the two of you have, sometimes you can sort of get that gut that, oh, here's what might be going on. But it sounds as if these are a series of one-offs, basically.
I think that's fair.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much.
So where are we? We were asked to consider a 15% reduction, and thanks to Mr. Fagan's assistance, that has occurred in terms of indicating how that would impact us. It would certainly result in a reduction of both our extraordinary expenses that we use for investigations and prosecutions, even at the more modest rate that we're asked being built into the regular budget. We would also have to think about the work of the commission and whether the travel budget is there for us to bring commission members in from all parts of the state for commission meetings. I mean, we have a speakerphone. It is certainly the least satisfactory way of conducting business, but it's available. And, you know, if we end up having to do budget reduction to that extent, we probably will be looking at our travel and asking people who are coming from Ontario or wherever to consider joining us by speakerphone. It's unfortunate in that it makes them less able to participate in the work of the commission. I think it impacts the importance of having geographic diversity in making these decisions. And quite frankly, we will go on. I mean, the work of the commission will go on because we're all dedicated and we'll do it. But those would be the primary impacts. We would also then have to eliminate any training. And, you know, we don't exist in a bubble. There is a nationwide network of commissions that regulate the conduct of the judiciary across the United States. There are organizations that Ms. Isaacs has belonged to, and quite frankly, we have not had the resources to enable her to attend the meetings that are available to share information. But she's done a wonderful job. When she gets the newsletters, she will send us the information telling us what's happening on a nationwide basis. So we have a sense of proportionality, what's going on elsewhere. And if we have to eliminate training, if we have to cut back on our budget, we will do what we need to do, but the work of the commission will continue.
Yes, Representative Barker.
There's a bill, I don't know if you've seen it yet, and I can't tell you about it, that will remove this from you and send it somewhere else, and it apparently has to do with somebody unhappy about the results of the local judge.
Yeah, Representative Barker, I have seen the bill. I sat down and read it this week because I knew it might very well come up in discussion. What the commission would like to do as a group, we would like to, the nine of us, read it, talk about it. The first thing I saw when I looked at it is it would have an increased fiscal impact. It would definitely cost more under the method that's being proposed. But, you know, I look at the commission members as being resources to the legislature. If you would like to have our input, we're happy to come down and provide you further details on how the commission works and what the consequences would be of the proposed changes.
Okay, thank you. I would like that. Because the person who has the bill was saying Judge Yamuna supports it, all these other people. And I haven't had a chance to sit down with it, look at it yet. But
so. You might be stuck with me. Okay, as one of the trial attorneys, I'm the one that usually is doing the gabbing.
Well, good. That would work.
And our commission chair this year is Judge Jim Egan from the Oregon Court of Appeals. And I know Judge Egan would also readily make himself available as a resource.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Gee, you've got a silent panel up here. Mr. Bender, anything else from you?
Just one final comment. The last slide in the commission's presentation spoke about the impacts of reductions that would total approximately $25,000. The Joint Ways and Means Committee co-chairs published their existing resources budget framework. And in that particular framework, they do not have targets for specific agencies in the judicial branch, but they do have a reduction of 3.5% overall in order to balance the statewide budget. If that same 3.5% were applied to this particular agency budget, that would be equivalent to approximately a $9,000 reduction from current service level. So that is the amount of budget reduction that would be proportionate to what the co-chairs had for judicial branch. That, of course, they're asking you to come up with recommendations, and you may choose to recommend a greater or lesser reduction than the straight 3.5%.
I believe somewhere we're up trying to reach 90 million.
That's all? You're lucky.
Well, I mean, we're smaller than you are, so anyway. there is a quite difference. I think I think at one of the meetings I mentioned that public safety is a system, and that system comes from where we talk about from the side where my good friend Representative Barker and Representative Peloso and then you go all the way through the courts and corrections and what have you, and any pieces of those, all those pieces have to balance out in order for us to make the system go. So there's little discretion, I'll put it that way, there's little discretion in public safety when we start looking at it from a system standpoint. If I, the judicial branch, they'll say, well, I can't, actually, the court dockets are getting too full, Senator Winters, and, and we're not getting speedy trials. I'm going to leave it alone. any further questions? And besides, if you're with us a couple of sessions ago, courthouses are crumbling down. Hey, so with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good Lord.
I like it.